right. Well, welcome, guys. It's great to have you here. You know, before we get to kind of a standard call here and in our agenda, I wanted to introduce you guys to Susan Baracco. And you've been seeing her in the forum. I made an introduction about a month ago. But Susan she's my new launch coach. She is very excited to have her here. She is a very talented freelance writer, editor, and copywriter who works with women leaders. That's her target audience. She's also a past coaching client of mine. And one of the cool things about Susan is she's got a pretty diverse background. Not only as a writer, but also as an entrepreneur. And as a coach, she's got an extensive coaching background. She's going to be working with me, again, as a launch coach here in this group to help you guys get your business off the ground and land your first paying clients. You're going to see her more and more in the forum. She's going to be joining me in these calls. And hold on, let me unmute her so she can say hello. Hey, Susan, are you there?
I am here. Good afternoon.
Hey, absolutely. Welcome.
Thank you.
Great to have you here.
Thank you. Thank you.
Great to be working with you. It's a lot of fun. She and I have been working together for a couple of years now. And when I was looking to bring someone in to help me with coaching, she's someone that I've been keeping in mind because of her unique background. Susan, because, you know, everyone here is in the same spot, everyone is trying to get their business off the ground, get going, land that first paying client. I'm curious, and I know people in the call are as well, how did you get started and when did you get started? How did you get going when you first went out as a freelancer?
Well, I actually great question. I actually bounced around a little bit. I have owned a couple different kinds of businesses over the course of my career, and I've also had a corporate track as well to my career, and I kind of bounced back and forth between the two. I think it's interesting because when you launch out on your own, it's scary as all get out to just take that leap and
yes.
and kind of go there, and I've been there. And then there were those times when I said, this isn't for me, I'm going back, I got a good offer or something like that, and I fell for it, took the bait, went back. And I did that probably two or three times over the course of my career where I kind of bounced back and forth. And then finally, I just said, this is crazy. I'm an entrepreneur. I'm a business owner. I love working with business owners. This is my thing. So I stuck with that. In the course of my career, I've actually owned two franchises. I have owned a retail shop. My husband and I started out the beginning of our marriage with buying a retail liquor and wine shop many, many years ago in the 90s. And then I owned two coaching franchises. And in that span of time, it was about probably 10 years of my career, I was running two franchises, coaching executives and small business owners. So I have all this background with working with small business owners, which is kind of a passion for me. And then several years ago, I decided I'd gotten out of the franchising, kind of went back to a real job, which I hated. Turned out, you know, I'd bounced around again from a couple different jobs. And first time in my life, after I turned 50, first time in my entire career, I got fired. So I have that little badge of courage on me. So that's a thing I'm actually kind of proud of. It's kind of funny. But it was one of those things I was like, okay, I need to just stop doing this to myself and be what I know I'm supposed to be, and that's running my own gig. So I started writing, and I have a degree in English. I actually started writing as a kid, doing a lot of journaling and that kind of thing, and went to school, got a degree, a bachelor's in English, and so writing has been a part of my life for a long time. And I just said, you know what, I think I want to write for a living. And it's just ironic to me that it kind of came full circle in my career. So for the last, I would say, 5 years, I've been writing. And I started out like many of the people in this group, and I think that's, I know you and I have talked about this, but that's part of what attracted me to partnering with you on this particular program, because I kind of dove in and I was like, all right, I'm going to just put myself out there as a copywriter, and I'm just going to do whatever, you know, work I can get my hands on. And And over the years, I've narrowed and pivoted and fine-tuned and tried different things, and you know, really in a place now where I'm loving what I do. It has taken me a while to figure this out and to figure out my way of where there's work, where there's need, where I'm strongest, you know, that intersection that we talk about all the time, about all those things coming together, and yep, that's my spot. That's where I need to be. It doesn't happen overnight, and certainly didn't happen overnight for me. I don't think I'm unique in that. I think it takes time for most folks to kind of find their way and figure out what's the sweet spot. So I now work with, as you mentioned, I focus on working with women professionals. I do ghostwriting. I help them writing blogs. I write articles. I help them put together presentations. I've got a lot of experience with presentation development, slide deck development, things like that. And most recently, really focusing on ghostwriting and helping coach people through writing their own book. And that's been an absolute blast. I've been doing editing. I've been, you know, helping people write their books. Complete blast. I really feel like, okay, I finally found my place in the world, and this is fun. So that's just a hopefully a brief synopsis of some of the things that I've been through, and hopefully some of you can relate. The folks here in this program can relate to kind of the ups and downs, and not to worry, because it's part of the process. It's part of what you're going through, and there's light at the end of the tunnel. I think at times when you're first starting out, you feel like, what am I doing? And I just ought to go get a job. And you know, if this is really calling you and you really know that you want to be doing it, then stick with it. You know, there's one thing I can leave you all with is, you know, stick with it, hang in there. It'll get better. It gets easier as you go.
Well, one of the things that I love about your story, Susan, is that, it's a journey, isn't it? It's, you know,
indeed.
We have frameworks in place and systems and exercises to help you dramatically increase your chances of getting results quickly. However, what you start out with is not going to be where you end up, guaranteed. And your story is a perfect example of that. So you want to get results as quickly as possible, mostly because you need the momentum. It's so important right now that you start getting wins that feed your self-confidence and give you momentum. But you need to be flexible enough to understand that, you know, you will pivot. You will course correct. You right? You will move around. And so that's great, because I think because you have that experience, one of the things that I love about that is that you're going to be able to help people here alongside me with kind of where they are and where they're trying to go.
Sure.
As opposed to, you know, maybe someone who didn't have anything go wrong hasn't learned.
Not me.
You know, it's funny. There are a lot of venture capitalists out in Silicon Valley who will not invest in a company if the founder has not had at least one major failure.
Failure, yeah. You know, interesting. Yeah.
And I love that. I love that, because it's, if you haven't, you don't know. You don't have the perspective you need to really succeed. So.
Yeah.
You and I both have had our ups and downs, and I'm just great. It's just so great to have you here. I know you're going to add a lot of value to the group. And guys, I'm not going anywhere. I'm just looking to give you guys more support and more perspectives. And I know Susan's going to be an invaluable resource for you. So
awesome.
Welcome, Susan.
Yeah. Thank you. Excited to be here, and really hoping to bring some value. One other thing that I'm a huge junkie is I'm a LinkedIn junkie. I actually spent the last two summers traveling for a client teaching LinkedIn to business professionals across the country. Two summers in a row was a blast, and just really loved it. So you're going to be seeing some more information from me about LinkedIn in the coming days and weeks. We're going to be doing a little bit more, because it's a cool tool, and just as an added bonus to the program to help you understand how to utilize that tool if it makes sense for you. So for B2B folks, it's definitely a cool tool, and the more you know about it, the better. So.
Yeah, that's awesome.
That.
So just know, Susan is a resident LinkedIn expert. So
I wouldn't go that far, but
answering your question. Well, you know, it's you really are, and I know it's becoming hotter and hotter. It's becoming kind of an inevitable thing. You really gotta be in there and use it as a, not just a research tool, but really a tool connection. To engage prospects, start conversations, and stay top of mind.
Cool.
All right, Susan. Well, thank you for that. Let's get started, as we usually do, by going around the room and just sharing wins. So in the chat box, I'd like for you to type with a capital W, just so I know what you're referring to. Wins, and an explanation of what that is, we're talking about progress of any kind, big or small, that you've had over the past couple of weeks, something you feel good about. It could be the fact that, hey, I'm moving along through the program. I'm being disciplined about it. I'm moving right along. Or maybe I got a good insight last week. Or I finally finalized my positioning. Or I'm making progress with my website. Or I went live with my website. Or I got a key breakthrough. Or a prospect responded, if you're there. Just let me know by typing in W and then letting me know what that win has been for you. Colleen says, when? Got a response to a warm email, and we're talking tomorrow. Woo-hoo, man. Love that. Isn't that great? To me, when I get a response to a prospecting email, I want a client, but just getting that in and of itself is a huge boost. So I totally get it. That's fantastic. Andrea says she's finished the program. All right, Andrea, way to move through it. Susan says, got my ugly baby website covered, moved, and design out one. All right. Hey, it's a start. You got something. You got something out there. That's what matters. Betty says, website ready. Tech support should have it up and running in the next couple of days. Working on prospecting list. Fantastic. Congratulations, Betty. Erica says, I'm making good progress in the course and working on my website. There you go. Love it. Rochelle, going through the program? Yes, absolutely. It's great to have you here, Rochelle. Jenny, talk to a prospect. We're going to follow up in the next few days. Fantastic. Frances, getting my website text on a Word document for review. We'll submit this coming Monday. Look forward to that, Frances. Way to move through it. That's a big step, so congratulations. Nikiru says, making progress with the program and other online learning. Put up my LinkedIn cover. And started adding connections, reached out to a networking group, Company of Women here in Canada, to do a webinar, and they accepted. I'm slotted for October. Oh, that's fantastic. Man, you're cranking. Love it. Jason says, people in my network are very responsive right now. One friend needs 10 articles written, another potential client from a different connection. Fantastic. That's the way to go, Jason. Start with your network. Easier wins, and that's really the name of the game right now, right? It's just to start getting wins, keep that momentum going. Way to go. All right, let's stay here in the chat box. I'd love to know your lessons, any lesson you've learned over the past couple of weeks. Doesn't necessarily need to be from the program, but of course it can be. Something useful you've learned in the past week or so. Just let me know by typing in L in the chat box and what that is. Something that has been useful, lesson learned, either in this program or it could be outside of it. But, of course, as closely related to what we're trying to do as possible. Lessons learned. Let me know in the chat box. I know for me, one big lesson has been, and this is not didn't come out of the blue, but just kind of the final realization that LinkedIn can be an amazing conversation starter. There's no other platform, I think, where you can really do that. I've been starting some great conversations with potential coaching prospects there. And once I realize that it's really about just starting some dialogue and not about generating a lead, my world has changed. So this is something I realized a few weeks ago, but it really hasn't been until the past couple of weeks where I've taken that to heart and already starting to see the results. So just experimenting with some new stuff there that's working really, really well. I'll reveal any results and anything I think might be applicable to you guys over the next few weeks. Jason said, big lesson for him, trading up concept that's helped him keep things in perspective. Absolutely. And the whole idea there, guys, is when all you need is it's just some kind of client, right? Some kind of client who's willing to give you a shot. We're not into client quality right now. That's not what we're looking for. Our focus is really just a client, because the boost in confidence and experience that you'll get from that opportunity, you'll be able to use that and trade up to the next level of client the next time around. And the name of the game here is just to get that so you can keep trading up little by little until, before you know it, you're working with top-shelf clients. So trading up is, I also refer to it as stair-stepping in the program, extremely, extremely important. Erica says, lesson, the importance of telling everyone that you're a copywriter, since I may have a lead through someone I just happened to sit next to at a co-working space. Fantastic. You know, that is so cool, Erica, because I think what we do is such an odd thing, right? Most people don't understand what a copywriter is, or even if you're talking about yourself as more of a writer, people don't understand that writers actually get paid, that people actually get paid to write. So it can be a little awkward, but just having a layman's value statement, something you can use when someone asks you what you do and you are pretty sure they're not in the business, in being able to explain that in just plain language is a really, really useful thing. I encourage everyone here to do that and to practice that. Have something handy you can use to explain to someone if you're put on the spot. What is it that you do? Monique says, big lesson, the importance of self-care along the journey. So true. So true. This business can be all-consuming. You know, I know some people who work in an environment where come 5 o'clock, they're done, and they don't think about work until the next morning. This business, when you're on your own, I think really any time you're on your own, can really be 24/7. So it's important to take the time and carve out the time to take care of yourself. Susan says, big lesson, one of the best things I can do for overall growth is investing in myself. Couldn't agree more. Nikiru says, just put myself out there and stop being scared of making a mistake. Only mistake is doing nothing. So true. In fact, just going back to what Susan and I were talking about, mistakes are really feedback. There's no such thing as a failure, really. I know that's a cliche, but truly, if you haven't failed, if you haven't made mistakes, you're not learning. So see them as feedback. There's a book out there, by the way. This I just picked it up again because I read it a couple of years ago, and it transformed my thinking in that area. It's called The Obstacle is the Way. The Obstacle is the Way. It's a little book. You can read it, you know, in an afternoon, possibly. And it's a reframe, really, about the fact that we look at challenges and obstacles as things we don't really want in our lives and in our businesses. But really, the way to progress is those obstacles, is those challenges. It's a fantastic book. I can't recommend it enough. Let's see. And Jenny says, I had an urgent project that sidelined my marketing B2B launcher progress. I realized that I can't let immediate billable hours completely override work on developing prospective billable hours. Also, I have to prioritize taking a day off. That's going to be tomorrow. Fantastic. Yes, so important to have some of that time off. And, you know, it won't happen, Jenny, unless you block it out like you would I don't know. Let's just say that you have to go out of town. I mean, you're not going to just not go to the airport. You know, you got a ticket. You got to go. It's amazing how things get done when you have no choice, when you have that constraint there. So if you block it, there's a greater chance that it's going to get done. Good for you. All right. Let's go and move into questions. I'd like to know from you guys where I can help you. What do you need most right now? A couple of ways you could do it. You can raise your hand by dialing *2 on your telephone keypad or by typing in the question in the submit a question to Ed box there on the call page. So *2, or you can type it in and then we'll have a chat. I'm going to start. I don't see any raised hands yet, so I'm going to start with questions that were pre-submitted, and we'll go back and forth. All right. Some of these were pre-submitted a few days ago. This one from Andrea says, hi, Ed. I want to write content for the senior healthcare industry. I'm starting with home non-medical care companies. I find that many of these companies are quickly bought by bigger companies and that local contacts are franchisees. When I talk to a franchise owner, they state their marketing is done by the parent company and they don't produce their own materials. Most seem clueless about the marketing, about the material marketing part of the business. My warm emails are going to the parent company, but I can see and talk to the local person. How much time and effort goes into nurturing the local franchise owner versus the main office? What is the best approach to efficiently split that time? All right, so here's what I'm hearing is that you're hitting a wall with the local contacts because they're all telling you that the marketing is being done and provided by the head office, by the corporate office, the parent company, and they don't produce their own. So, and if not only that, but they're also clueless about it. Because I've seen franchises where the franchisees have some leeway. They have a and they're encouraged by the parent company to do a lot of their local marketing. And they provide some resources, but many times they have to go do a lot of their own stuff. But in this case, it sounds like you're not seeing that, and everyone is pointing to the parent company. So I would continue to go after the parent companies because that's where your best bets are going to be in terms of how much time and effort to put into it versus local versus main office. I mean, I think it really should just be the main office for now. I mean, there might be the occasional, based on what you've had so far, the occasional local franchisee who has some leeway, but based on your results so far, it sounds like that's fairly rare. So I would continue to go to the parent company. The real question is, you know, how many of these are there? Because you want to make sure that it's not so narrow that, you know, after 50 or 60 of these, you'll be done, okay? You need a wider market. So if you need to broaden things a little bit in that target market, senior healthcare, then that, you know, that's something to consider. But if you're here, and I think you are, let's talk about it if you'd like. Okay, let's see. Francis had a question that he pre-submitted. He said, I understand you want my website submission as a Word document. Even if I have a website, I need to copy its contents into a Word file and edit it according to the positioning exercise. The advantage of a Word document is that you can type comments right into the document where they are relevant. I was wondering, when I have my new website ready, would you look at it and then comment on this format and layout and any other non-textual matters? So the way I do the website reviews, Francis, and if you go to the website review thread, you can see some examples, is I'll take your document, I'll blow it up on my screen, and I'm going to do a screencast. And it's basically a video where I'll walk through what you have and then offer feedback, suggestions, suggested edits, and so forth. Sometimes I'll go ahead and use the track changes feature in Word to show you where I'm making changes, where I'm making suggested comments and edits. The comments are really going to be verbal, and then the edits I'll make using track changes, but I'll do that visually so you can see where they are. So when you get it, what you're going to want to do is, so in other words, I'm not going to edit or proofread your document, okay? That's really defeats the purpose. What I'm going to do is just give you feedback. When you get the video, what I suggest you do is play the video, have the document ready, and when I make a suggestion, if you like, just go ahead and hit pause on the video and then go to the document and make that edit there, or change it however you see fit, okay? And then hit play again and so forth. So if it's in a Word document, that's usually how it works. And any comments that I have, instead of inserting a comment or anything like that, I'll just give you the comment verbally there in the video. Okay. All right, let me just go to one more, and then I see a couple of hands raised, so I'll go to the phones here. Colleen says, Over the past couple of months, I've sent out 200 warm emails. I've had some conversations, some negative responses, and a lot of no response. My question is this list I've developed of any further use? If so, how? Okay, yeah, great question. The answer is yes, absolutely further use. Let's separate it by kind of response or outcome, okay? So the first group is, let's start with kind of the hottest group, where you've had conversations. If you had conversations and the outcome was, you know, this sounds good, we don't have anything right now, but I'm going to keep your information handy, and if things change or if something comes up, I'll let you know. Something along those lines. So essentially, the prospect is saying, yes, but not now. It's a timing issue. It's a timing issue. Then what you're going to want to do is, and I think, Colleen, you finished the program in the last session, session 8, I give you a step-by-step process for staying in touch with your not-yet-ready prospects and how to do that. So just follow that process. Essentially, stay in touch in a value-added, non-threatening way about every couple of months and with something, yeah, something that just keeps you top of mind. So that's that would be kind of the best-case scenario. Of course, best-case scenario is you land a client, but the next best is this one. You had a conversation. It was a timing issue. The no people, and by no I mean no, don't need anything, we don't write marketing materials, or we don't whatever, right? It's the definitely a no. It's not a timing thing. It's just no, never, thank you, kind of thing, then I would just strike those off the list. And then the third category would be those who never responded, which is usually the biggest group. Out of 200, I bet that's, you know, easily 80%. What I would do is after a month or two, I would go ahead and send them another warm email. A lot of writers hesitate on that because they feel, well, gosh, what, you know, I've already contacted them. I'm really going to be bugging them if I do that. And here's the thing you need to recognize. People are so busy that there's a very, very small chance that they're even going to recognize you, okay? What you're doing by trying them out a month or two later, by reaching out again, is you're trying to see if maybe the reason for no response was a timing thing. It landed in their inbox at the wrong day. They were traveling. They got back. They were flooded with email, and they just didn't pay attention or hit delete. They didn't even read it. But suddenly, it's right place at the right time, and you get a response. I see this over and over again. When you go back to prospects who didn't respond, you will get responses from those who didn't respond the first time. So send it out again, and I'm going to give you a third step. A month or two later, even those who didn't respond, what I would do is at that point I would go and see if you can find another marketing contact in each of those organizations and try it out and basically send them the same warm email. You can send the same warm email copy. That's the good news. And I guarantee you they're not going to remember. It's not going to feel like a repetitive thing. There's no reason to reinvent the wheel, write new copy. It looks the same to you, but they've had thousands of emails since you last reached out to them. They're not going to remember. Okay, so let's go to the phones again. Star 2, if you have a question, you want to raise your hand and you want to have a chat. All right, I'm not sure who this is, but this is a Parkville, Maryland number, 5343, last four digits. You're on.
Hey, Ed.
Oh. Yeah.
Hi, it's Jenny.
Hey, Jenny. How's it going?
Hey. Okay. Waiting for my day off. I'm like tired. How are you?
Yeah, I bet. Yeah, same with you. I could use a break for sure this weekend,
yeah.
but right now I'm pumped.
Good. I am stuck on my positioning statement, and I'm still working on it, you know, and what I did was like skip to the end, see how much more I needed to do and what kinds of things I needed to come up with, and then start filling in what I could. One of the things I'm coming up against is how does I guess I'm not really sure what really makes me different. How what makes me different is relevance, and what people in the markets I'm looking at would actually be looking for, what writers typically offer that I would do differently. I'm not sure, you know, how to find that out or figure that out.
All right, so walk me through what you have so far. So what target market are you thinking about going after?
Okay, and I've done a huge sort of spreadsheet thing, and it's probably too much, which is part of the problem. The basic areas are technology, agencies, education, and there's a reason for this, education, human services, and then health, wellness, fitness. And that's because I'm already in the nonprofit sector with human services, education, and that kind of makes sense, at least as a starting point, but I don't know that that's where I really would like to be. And so that's where the technology, that sort of thing, would come into play, that ultimately I think I'd rather be there.
Okay.
And there are subcategories within there, but those are the general categories.
Yeah, no, that's good. That's what I'm looking for. Let's kind of keep it high level. All right, so in terms of where you have contacts, right, in terms of where you, especially since right now you're in the nonprofit sector, so where do you have contacts where you'd be able to reach out and, you know, not that they would hire you directly, but where they may have, those people might have contacts they can introduce you to? When you look at each of these, in other words, how do they score?
In the contacts category, okay. In technology, I'd say like printing and that area, equipment manufacturing, paper and printing technology, and that, the physical stuff maybe not so much, but, you know, they're verging into VR and stuff like that. There could be something, you know, where they might want somebody to do some writing. Agencies, I've got some contacts there. That's green. High education, capital campaign consultants, all of that, green. Human services, lots of contacts. Environmental organizations. So those are my best chances as far as the contacts go.
Mm-hmm.
Human
okay.
services, education.
Now, tell me a little bit more about human services, so I can kind of think of this the right way in my head. Give me some categories under that.
Philanthropic organizations, community foundations and family foundations, community development organizations, community associations, and housing organizations.
Okay.
Also, some environmental stuff, some environmental organizations.
Gotcha. Okay. All right, the next category is really, you know, where is there a need for writing in terms of marketing materials, right? What needs to be explained? What needs to be marketed in writing? And so when we look at tech, that's an obvious one. That's always going to be a yes there.
Yeah.
That they need marketing material. Agencies, yes. Now, agencies, let me go to that one specifically. That's not really a good target market in that by itself. Because agencies, think of it as that's transparent. So agencies is not a good target market, but agencies focused on healthcare companies is a good target market. You see what I'm saying? Agencies only mirror something. They're not the thing itself, if that makes sense.
Okay.
So you could go after agencies, but it needs to be something else. Agencies that do this type of work, or that, even better, that focus or go after these types of clients.
Okay.
But agencies, I mean, the one thing that they do have is the fact that they are producing marketing materials. Okay. But what I'm saying is it's not going to be a good differentiator itself just to say agencies. So that one, definitely written materials. Education, yes, but not across the board. It just depends, right? So educational tools, technology, really high-end services, that sort of thing. That stuff needs to be explained, needs to be marketed. Human services, you know, you would know more than I do. I know that companies that sell to human services organizations or agencies, I should say, will definitely need marketing materials. But what about the human services agencies themselves?
Okay.
I mean, I'm asking you, what does it look like there from a marketing material?
See, I don't know. That's one of those things where they have smaller things that they might need that could be a good stepping stone. You know, newsletters, strategic plans, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Especially a lot of people are regrouping, what with the changes in tax code here. You know, folks have got to figure out what they're going to do and how they're going to stay viable. To me, I coded everything green, yellow, red as far as what, you know, what's going to look best, and that's yellow. That it's like, I don't see it for me working out long term and really, you know, profitable, but there's stuff, you know, then those are the things where I'm doing the design for them and they hire a writer, you know. They do a lot of blogging. You know, so that's something where I know that there's a writer involved, but, you know, I just don't know how much I'd want to do that. But there should be opportunity.
Gotcha.
I don't know. Of course, there's a grant writing, but I think they tend to do that themselves.
Well, so that would be something to explore if you had a great insider view. So, for instance, if you had a lot of contacts there and relationships where you could start a conversation very easily with prospects there to see where you might be able to help them, then that's a great place to start. But if you're really more of an outsider, then it's really not, because it's going to be very difficult to, if that makes sense, right? When you have a relationship, it's easy to have a conversation. When you don't, and you got to go cold, you're really digging, and they may not give you that much information. You may not really get a lot of insights as to whether or not there's a demand.
Yeah. I think this would actually be a good area, because some of the most supportive people I've worked with and my references have come from there. So they would at least be honest with me about what's available, you know, and where I might fit in.
Well, you know what you could do is one option would be go after human services agencies and the businesses and organizations that sell to them, right? So it's kind of a dual effort there, and that gives you a broader market.
Okay.
And then health, wellness, and fitness, I mean, that is that more of a personal passion?
Yeah, it's more of a passion. As far as the contacts I have, that's in the yellow. You know, I have family, you know, bodybuilders, stuff like that, health guru types who could possibly be connections, you know. And it's something where I follow a lot of folks on there and have considered actually, you know, applying for work in there. But I don't think I really have. Let me see. Yeah, there's some contact.
Okay.
I mean, I'm kind of iffy about it. It's something that I'm pretty passionate about, but, you know, as far as I don't know how many, you know, first, like, immediate contacts there are, but that could work.
Yeah, that's one of those that's kind of like travel, that you need more than just a passion. You need either a lot of contacts or an insider's view, an insider track. In order to get some traction. So what I'm seeing is, I think that human services agencies and the companies that sell to them, and by the way, this is a great tip from Jennifer Gregory, who's a very successful freelance writer. She actually suggests, and I agree, that no matter what you go after, you should always have kind of a tech track as well, kind of a tech angle to it, because pretty much any industry or target market you go after uses technology in some way. So what she means is you go after human services agencies and the companies to sell to them, and you also position yourself as someone who can help technology vendors that sell tech to that target market, if that makes sense.
Okay.
Because
so
with tech, there's always going to be written materials.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's good, and that could then branch into the, you know, the pure tech. Because I think it would be interesting to, you know, work with software developers, hardware developers, cloud and software as a service, that sort of thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it could lead into that ultimately.
Yeah, absolutely. And you don't need to be a tech, really techie person to do that well, because what tech companies mm-hmm. really want is someone who could really speak to the business buyer. I mean, yeah, I mean, some of them really want very technical pieces for the technical evaluators, you know, the
mm-hmm.
IT people and stuff. But that's not where a lot of the writing's being. You could make a great living just writing, translating that stuff into business value.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I just don't know, you know, I've worked in all of these areas, not the wellness thing directly, but everything else I've worked in, but I don't know how to me, the biggest differentiator is that I'm, you know, I have 30 years plus experience as a graphic designer and a marketer, but is that really making me different? You know, how is that of value?
The real differentiator is your knowledge and understanding of that target market.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be your biggest value. The things that you bring to the table that you can't teach someone overnight.
Mm-hmm.
So with human services, how long have you been in that environment as a whole?
Yeah, forever.
Okay. Yeah, you can't
really
teach someone that overnight, because as a writer, what that gives you is invaluable perspective.
Mm-hmm.
So forget about the you know, anything surrounding your craft, and really highlight mm-hmm. those other intangibles, the stuff that, man, nobody can teach you that overnight. You come with that prepackaged.
Yeah.
So what I'm seeing is, I think the human services angle is probably your best starting point, and your differentiator
mm-hmm.
there is an extension of that, is the fact that you've been in that environment forever,
mm-hmm.
right? So you can hit the ground running, you understand, you have that perspective, you know, you don't need that hand-holding.
Mm-hmm.
You're the obvious choice. That's it.
Okay.
Makes sense?
That's helpful. Yeah. Yeah, I really had a lot of fear, panic. I'm like, I can't do this. But like,
sure,
that's
but
helpful.
You know, just like what we talked about earlier, this is a starting place. All we're trying to do is figure out theoretically, and I say theoretically because we don't know until we get out there, theoretically, what's going to be your best bet? So
mm-hmm.
let's make the best decision possible. Don't overdo it with a spreadsheet. I think you need to maybe even close that. and because, you know, there's this concept of optimizing we are familiar with, but there's this other concept called satisfizing. The moment we really try to optimize something complex like this, you're going to drive yourself crazy. Satisfizing is actually good enough. It's, you know what, I'm satisfied with this as a starting place, because it's impossible to optimize something like this. So let's work on satisfying, and let's just start there. The real learning and the real insights you're going to get are once you start knocking on doors, once you get out there. But you can't get out there until you've declared your positioning. So let's get out there, let's get feedback, and you can course correct. You can't course correct until you start moving, right?
Yeah, true.
So I would say this is more than just good enough. Great starting place, and let's try it.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you.
Cool. So what's your, I just want to make sure you have something tangible. What's your next action step here?
Action step on here is just to wrap up. I've been taking a stab at some of the statements at the end of the exercise and just come up with something complete and focus on one. I'll probably add education too, because I have a prospect I'm talking to who is a consultant for educational institution. So do the same thing for that.
Well, that kind of fits with that, right? Educational institutions and human services agencies, like that's the it kind of fits together. It's not, human services agencies and massage therapists. That doesn't go together. It's like that Sesame Street thing that when I was growing up, the four things and the one that just doesn't belong. But in this case, it does. Did I lose you? Are you still there? Oh, I think I may have lost Jenny. All right, Jenny. It sounds like you got a good start there. I would say don't overthink it. Let's just go with that. Let's put it out there. Let's get moving so you can start getting feedback and you can refine as you go. Good stuff. Good stuff, guys. This is why it's with positioning, it really helps to have a conversation. So don't be shy to raise your hand. Star 2, if you have a question, of course, you can always type it in as well if you prefer that. Monique is on. Hey, Monique.
Hey, Ed. How are you?
Doing well. It's good to hear your voice.
Good. Thank you. Same here. So my question is around the warm email. So I've contacted friends and family, and so I'm working my way through sending out emails. And what I'm finding is that I'm not, you know, that video you showed us where you use the name in quotations plus the company website at whatever. I'm not having a lot of luck actually finding the emails, and I find I'm spending a lot of time doing that. So, one, I want to ask you, there is a way, I imagine, even if it's a paid way, that's reasonable, that I could just get those emails faster. One. Two, I'm glad to hear Susan is going to talk more about LinkedIn, because I was thinking, well, we're using LinkedIn to get information, and then we're going out on Google to find the email. Why not just contact them directly on LinkedIn? But I understand that's more of a, you know, I guess you just sort of making connections first, and that's a slower process, right?
Yeah. And in fact, we're going to post some training that Susan did on LinkedIn. And we're going to add that to session 5 here in the next few days. So I'll let you guys know when that's up there. However, let me point something out. LinkedIn is not a substitute for sending. It's not the vehicle to send the warm email, okay?
Right.
So if you can't find the email, definitely don't send it through a private message.
No.
LinkedIn requires a totally different approach, right? Here's the thing. There are other tools. I don't know if you saw that, but in session 5, there is the training there on top, and then below that is a video on finding prospect names and emails. And then under that video, there's also a PDF with 24 different tools for doing the same thing.
No, I missed that. I missed that. I didn't see that. Yeah. Okay.
I think that's really going to help you. Some of them, most of them are free, or they have a free trial. The one that a lot of people are grabbing. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I'm sorry, I cut you off. Go ahead. You were answering the question. I was asking if there's any that you think works the best.
Oh, yeah. The one that a lot of people have been gravitating to over the past year or so has been Hunter. And you'll see it listed there.
Okay.
But it's very, very effective. And so I think it's got a trial version where they give you like 100 searches for free, which I think is very generous.
Mm.
So give that one a try. Now, here's what I'll say, though, Monique, and this is for everybody, because, look, we're all going to go through this process regardless of where you are right now. So even if you're not there, just remember this. You will never find every single email for every prospect you want to contact, okay? So that is the wrong expectation.
Mm-hmm.
If I can find 60 to 70% of them, I'm happy.
Mm-hmm.
The strategy is give yourself a time limit for finding that prospect's email address. Actually, I do, for me, it's for finding a name and their contact information. And I give myself a time limit. I won't spend more than 5 minutes. If I can't find it then, it's better to move on than it is to continue to search.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is really, at least right now, it's kind of a numbers game.
Mm-hmm.
So move on. If you don't, what will happen is it can become an obsession. And I see this all the time. People get really frustrated, and then they quit for the day. And you don't want to do that. You don't want to lose.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm experiencing. And I work full time, so I'm doing this like in the evening when I'm already tired. So I'm like, okay, I'm wasting too much time on some of these.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so move on. But I think these tools are really going to help you, and you'll get at least 60, 70%. And here's the last, my last resort, by the way, Monique,
mm-hmm.
is if I can't find it, but in my Google search or some other way I found somebody else's name in the company, doesn't really matter who they are, then I will use the email convention that I found. So if I found Ed Gandia's, and it was ed.gandia@abccompany.com, then I'll just say, well, then my contact is Amy Schwann, so I'll do amy.schwann@abccompany.com.
Right.
I tried that
a few times, and then I ran into one particular company that they have different, locations. They're more decentralized. And then I saw like a couple of different locations. Their email style is different, but definitely. If I find another name, I said, okay, let me just at least try to go with that.
Yeah, it's a last. That's why it's a last resort.
Yeah,
it's kind of a Hail Mary pass, you know.
Okay. The other thing I was trying to do as well, since I'm, I'm sending the email. I think there sounds like the first question that was submitted, that someone else is also in the senior health market as well. And yeah, it's very sort of decentralized, like, franchisees and then a corporate office, and the corporate office does seem like they do handle the marketing, the overall, content marketing. And it's hard to find those people. But what I've done with a few of the emails I've sent, and tell me what you think of this. At the bottom of the email, I'll add, if you're not the right decision maker, if you don't mind passing this email along, would appreciate it. Does that sound insulting, or I don't know? What I mean?
Does it work sometimes? Yes. I don't like it, though, and here's why. You lose the tension you've created with the question. So when you say, hey, would it make sense to connect, you've built some tension that's just begging for some resolution. And when you, for instance, if you say, would it make sense for us to connect, and then next line down, and by the way, if you're not the right person, would you mind sending us to the right one? It does two things. First of all, you've diffused the tension you've built, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other one is it can come across as, I didn't want to spend a lot of time finding that person, so I figured I'd send it to you, but will you please then help me, by sending this to the right person. It could, I'm not saying that was your intention or that's what you're doing, but it could come across that way. So for that reason, those reasons, I'd rather not.
Okay. Have you tried it that way?
Here's what's going to happen. If you have a good prospect, they're going to forward it.
You don't think that? I thought they would be more likely just to delete the email since it's not them. But who knows?
Yeah, you could second guess yourself.
Right.
you know, I haven't done a study on this, like a scientific experiment, but it's really anecdotal. It's just been based on my experience and just when I've been on the receiving end too.
Okay. So you would recommend not put it, add in that line?
I would recommend not adding it, exactly.
Okay. If for example, since some of these emails, I'm not sure if they're even reaching the target, how you feel about just calling them and leaving a voicemail, even though I might have sent an email as well?
Yeah, I mean, you can absolutely do that. My friend Elise Bennett is a big fan of that. And the way that she does it, she's experimented with this. First of all, this is not necessarily part of the process, okay? So for those of you thinking, oh, my gosh, do I have to pick up the phone? It told me I didn't. if you want to do it, then I'm fine with that. Two things. First, keep in mind that it's going to take time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that adds time. And two, you got to have to prepare for it. So the approach that tends to work is while you're looking for their email, find their phone, their phone number, and then do the call either later that day or the next day. And your call script is essentially, it's very similar to your warm email. You could turn your warm email and turn it into a call script. It's like, hi, Monique, this is Ed Gandia. I'm reaching out because, you know, I saw that, you know, I noticed this about you. And, in fact, that's what I help companies do. And depending on what you're doing in this area, I may be able to help you write, you know, some marketing materials. I was curious if, you know, if it makes sense for us to schedule a conversation to talk about that. So very, very similar. And notice I didn't mention the fact that I sent them an email. What you're counting on is that between the email, which hopefully they've opened, and your message, it's kind of a double whammy. You're kind of reinforcing that message, and it's not going to kind of come out of the blue because this is sounding familiar.
Right?
The other key thing, if you're going to do that, is leave a voicemail. 80 to 90% of the time, you're going to get voicemail. Leave the voicemail just like I did right now, except, of course, you can add your contact information at the end.
Right.
You can reach me at this number, or here's my email address.
Right. With the calls, I mean, I'm nervous about the calls, too, but I figure I'm going to have to talk to someone at some point. So in a strange way, it kind of helps me just to pick up the phone and just try to get used to reaching out and talking to someone. That's kind of my logic there.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you eventually will absolutely have to talk to someone, you know, once you get an interested prospect and, you know, now you're trying to discuss what you might be able to help them with, then at that point you're going to be on the phone. But completely up to you. There's two schools of thought. One that says don't spend the time doing that on the phone and instead spend that time contacting two other prospects via email. Mm-hmm. And others who feel that adding that can help increase the chances that you'll get a positive response. So try it.
Okay.
So basically, yes, go through the go through that document, the 24 tools PDF, go through the short video there, and then experiment with that phone follow-up approach. And listen, don't worry if you're making the calls. I know you work during a day. It's 7 o'clock in the evening. Again, voicemail is your friend. You're going to leave a voicemail anyway. So start with that. In fact, it might be better to start later in the day like that, because you'll get an opportunity to leave voicemails, and that's less nerve-wracking than knowing that there's a decent chance that they'll answer the phone.
Okay. Good enough. Thank you.
You bet, Monique. Okay. Let's see. I got Rochelle and Jason here with the hands raised. So let me take one. I'll take Rochelle. I'm going to answer a couple of questions real quick that were typed in, and I'll go back to Jason. Hey, Rochelle.
Hi, Ed. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. How's it going?
Great. It's going well.
Great. So what's cooking?
Okay. Well, I am kind of running into the wall. The best description I can give is, you know, when you're playing like Mario Kart and you won't turn the car, drop the steering wheel to a different direction, you just keep running into the wall. That's kind of where I am with my positioning statements and for my web copy. I kind of got here in a roundabout weird way. I'm probably the only one in this group that's got here this way. And so I kind of like just landed into copywriting and writing. And so I kind of feel like I'm working backwards, if that makes sense.
Okay.
Like I've had a few clients already, but I hadn't, you know, really gotten a lot of direction and clarity for who I'm targeting and stuff like that. So a little bit about my background. I'm basically leaving, or I launched this business after staying home for a while with my kid. But so I've been out of the workforce essentially before this for a couple years. The most recent thing I had done before starting this was real estate. And so I knew I didn't want to go back into that. And right now I know that we kind of went back and forth a little bit on Facebook about, you know, realtors are, we spend a lot of money on shiny objects, but copy isn't necessarily one of them. So, looking for a way to position myself with the background that I have so that I can get more momentum and, get some wins under my belt.
Okay. And you said you already have some clients, you're kind of working backwards, but what kind of clients are they and what do you do for them?
Right. So I did, I think I mentioned in the group that I had a client that I kind of took a look at they hired me or worked with me to work on their franchise agreement. It was a startup franchise, and the people that were becoming franchisees were not business. Their backgrounds ranged from, you know, education to just a lot of different things, and they wanted something in their franchise agreement that introduced them to the relationship, telling their story in their own voice about the history of the company and how they got to where they are, and letting them know, like, this agreement is going to be scary because it's a lot of, you know, jargon, but we're with you along the way kind of deal.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was my most recent project. And before that, I've written a couple speeches. And when I say I got here from a roundabout way, it's because I had initially started with, like, virtual assisting. And I don't like those tedious things, and so writing just seemed more of a natural fit. And so that's kind of how I ended up where I am.
Okay, gotcha. Now, how did you land the franchise gig? Did you have some experience in franchising, or was it kind of a out-of-the-blue thing through a contact of yours?
No, I actually met them on Thumbtack. That's where I had started, and I quickly got away from it. But when I was there, it was a great experience, the working with them. So working with the franchise planning. Yeah.
Gotcha. So that is the reason that one doesn't feel as attractive to me is that that's a very narrow opportunity that you worked on, meaning it was franchises and it was doing this specific thing for them. And that's too
right.
narrow, unless you're an insider and you've been
right.
in the franchise industry for, yeah, so that's going to not really be So then real estate was the other one you mentioned. And I know in the forum we talked about, well, if you're going to go there, the problem is most brokers and realtors, yeah, they don't really need a lot of stuff written, and many of them just do it on their own. The real opportunity there is marketing systems, lead generating systems, and that kind of thing. So in other words, where you can sell the whole package that produces real results, and you have a track record doing it. So unless you have that, it's going to be hard. I mean, it's not that you can't get some gigs. I know writers who have worked with realtors. It's just, it's going to be an uphill battle. And if you're going to drive your stake in the ground somewhere.
Right. Yeah. No, it is. And I really want to, I want to keep going with this and set myself up for the best, like, you know, chance of success. And I agree with that. That would just not be the route to take. So a little bit, Ed, so back up a little bit. I kind of have done a little bit of everything, but not a lot of one thing, if that makes sense. And so, I've worked in government and, you know, state agencies and elected officials, and I was a project manager for AT&T. And so I've worked with, you know, hurting the tech professionals to all get on one page to be able to, you know, hit deadlines and things like that on the project. But I can't seem to draw out of all of my experience a starting point. So
what has the exercise turned up? The positioning exercise. Are there some things that feel like a possibility other than what we've already talked about?
Besides government, besides tech, that's kind of the ones that I'm thinking about. I mean, after I listened to your podcast, I had kind of scratched that one out because it just seems like I would be like a little, you know, I would be more of subcontracting than actually maybe getting contracts federally or whatever, but starting out at least anyway. So, tech.
Okay. Tell me about, you said you worked for AT&T, you worked with a lot of engineers and technical people. Do you feel that you have a skill for translating kind of complex ideas and terms and just kind of communicating with engineers and then getting that information from them and putting it in a way or communicating in a way that others can understand?
Yeah. I mean, it's, I did it for a couple of years. Yeah.
Yeah. For 4 years. You did that work?
No, not 4 years. No. I did it for a couple of years. I said,
okay.
I feel comfortable with that. I guess I don't know how it can materialize, if that makes sense. Okay.
Yeah. All right. So here's the thing. And if you go back to the video in session one that I did on, it's kind of the decision tree, and there's a PDF that goes with it.
Right.
I think you're kind of toward, right now where I see you is you're toward the top right of that tree, of that flow chart, where I don't think it would really hurt to position, start out as somewhat of a generalist. You know, you're not picking, you don't have an industry that you're going to single out. But even as I mentioned there, if you go, I encourage you to go back to it because I think now that you've gone through this process, it's going to make more sense. Even then, you need a core differentiator. The danger with positioning yourself as a generalist is most people who do that, they're not taking the time to differentiate. It's just like, oh, I can write anything for anyone. You don't want that. You could say, you could be a generalist and then say, my core strength is taking information from subject matter experts, especially technical people and engineers, and communicating that in a way that lay people, customers, business decision makers can understand in a compelling doing that in a compelling way. That kind of, like, that's a real differentiator. So I say go back to that. Give that some thought. I think that that might be your best bet. And then, like, you know, we talked about earlier that you need to get out there and move. And once
yes.
you move, you'll know where to course correct. Right now,
okay.
I get it. You're that Mario Kart. You're stuck in that little corner, and
yes.
you know that's no good. This will get you back on the track, so you
okay.
can get moving.
Okay.
And once you get moving, then you'll know what how to. I guarantee you, the answers will come.
Okay. Now, I like that approach, and I think that I'm definitely going to give that some more thought and look into it. What do you think about the whole, like, copywriter, you know, / content writer? You know, what or is it business writer, or should I be just saying writer? I know I get caught up on those terms so much, but I want it to be consistent throughout all of my website, if that makes sense, the message that
yeah,
I'm sending.
Yeah, I wouldn't worry too much about that. I wouldn't worry about it. I would say writer.
Okay. Just say writer.
You know, and don't
okay.
need, yeah, just say writer because that leaves it open.
Okay.
So, yeah, absolutely. Just that's a minor thing.
Okay.
So I think your actions, next action item here is – go back to that decision tree, the video that goes along with it. Look at it through the lenses of, okay, you know what? I may start out as a generalist with a differentiator that's not about an industry. It's really more about a core skill that I have. Let me look at this training through those lenses and see if it starts resonating, if things start gelling.
Okay. Could I add another way to show, like, versatility with, you know, taking complex content and changing it. So there's the one, or making it understandable and approachable. There's the technology, but is there any way that I can add in the legal aspect of that? Or
yeah,
anything
that kind of supports that.
Okay.
Yeah, it fits. It's in that same column, isn't it? That
yeah.
all supports
yeah.
that argument.
Right. Okay. 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 All right. Thank you so much. I appreciate this.
You're welcome. Yeah. Yeah. It's good stuff. This is a painful process for sure. Not always, but sometimes. So totally get it. I think that's going to really get you moving again. Mario Kart is a lot more fun that way. All right, I'll tell you what. Let me go to Jason, and then I'm going to go to questions there in the queue that you guys typed in. Let's see. Hey, Jason, how's it going?
Good, Ed. How are you?
Doing good, man. Good to hear your voice.
Yeah, absolutely. I just wanted to ask just a couple quick questions. One was in the queue already. So I've got some doctors in my network and was wondering if they were an effective connector to reach out to for the med device space. I don't really know. I mean, I know they probably deal with their device salespeople, but is that a way up the ladder to the marketing communications people?
Yeah, meaning to see if they can refer you to someone?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, of course, if it's a relationship, yes. I would absolutely do that. In fact, my experience has been that the best contacts come from the sources where you almost hesitated to reach out to them because you felt, I don't know if they're going to know someone. I don't know if they're going to want to connect me. Are they going to be open to it? So hesitation, in a way, is kind of a good sign that maybe you should do it.
Sure. Yeah, I've been hitting up everybody in the network that has to do with PR and marketing and kind of shied away from the medical, but figured, I mean, if I'm going to go through everybody else, why not go through these guys too? Second thing was, and I know this is more of a longer term play. I mean, I'm looking at the warm email prospecting as strictly a numbers game. You know, if I get out enough emails over the next couple months, something's got to materialize from it. But in the longer game, and I was happy to hear Susan talk about LinkedIn a little bit, using that as sort of a content platform for me to talk about marketing. And marketing, maybe medical devices in general, publishing articles, And also, my wife works for Forbes, so I don't think it would be too much of an obstacle to become a contributor there for a couple of things. Mm-hmm. You know, putting out my own content sort of geared toward my target market. Good idea. I mean, a bad idea. What are your thoughts on that?
No, it's a great idea. Absolutely. The reason I don't get into that here is I used to before, and what I found was people were getting trapped in shiny object hell.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, because let's face it, right? It's kind of like, you know, if I give you a workout routine and say, that's it, this is what you got to do, and you look at it, and it looks extremely painful. And then I say, oh, and you know, you could also do 30 minutes or 20 minutes of sauna and, you know, do a little bit of swimming. What are you going to do? You know, as soon as I leave, you're probably going to go and do the sauna.
Right.
Right. So it's the same thing. It's like I want to really narrow your choices here because I want to give you what's going to generate some results quickly so you can get that momentum. Once we get you to that next level, it's a lot easier and it makes a lot more sense to do some of those things, some of the content marketing essentially that's going to bring in those leads.
Okay. That's fair.
Yeah. Yeah. So good stuff, though. It's I'm glad you're already thinking ahead, and definitely that's going to be and should be part of your mix for sure. A little bit of thought leadership.
Yeah, I mean, I have to definitely know we have to get the momentum going first and get a couple of little guys here and there. But we're just looking big picture just because, you know, committed to this for the long term. So just having the roadmap out there always helps.
Yeah, and one thing that you should know, and everybody here, is, guys, this is not going to be the formula that you're going to use forever. So right now, those of you who are already prospecting going, man, you know, this is cool, but I don't know. I can't see myself knocking on all these doors every week, you know, in 5 years. You won't be. Your marketing mix will evolve and will change. And what you want, actually, is in a few years, you want most of your opportunities coming to you instead of you having to seek them out. And that will happen if you do things right. But right now, it's the best way is to own that and to be proactive and to knock on the doors yourself.
Awesome.
Okay.
Yes, thank you for the help. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. My pleasure, Jason. You know what? I want to bring in Susan because Susan's had an interesting situation. I know where she goes after women leaders, but that's her target market. But sometimes you'll get someone who's not necessarily in your target market who comes to you or is referred to you. And anyway, let me bring her on because this is an interesting thing. Hey, Susan, you there?
Hi there. Yeah. Hi.
Yeah.
Hey, I've been listening to the conversation, obviously, and the back and forth and some of the comments from folks. And I kind of wanted to put this out there. It occurred to me, if you go to my website, you're going to see, hey, I'm this, you know, I focus on women. My title is, you know, such that it's very obvious that I work with women. But right now I have a little secret. I actually am working with a man as a client. And not only is he, I'm editing his book for him, but his book is actually a fiction book. And my wheelhouse really is pretty much nonfiction in terms of books. And, but he was a referral. He was somebody that I had come across and he really wanted to work with me, and we've been having a ball together, and it's working out really well. But the point is that I didn't go and change any messaging on my website, on my marketing, anything. I am a support resource for women writers, or for women who want to write books. That's my message. So, you know, as I'm hearing people are kind of grappling, going back and forth with the positioning, and what if I kind of want to do this, but then I have this other opportunity, and don't worry about it. Pick one thing that you really feel comfortable with right now that's, you know, you have the most experience in, you know, whatever industry, and put that out there for today and for this week and for this month. Just think about, you know, for the time being, the stick is going to go in the sand and I'm going to call myself a writer in this industry and be fairly broad in some cases. I know, Ed, you made a comment about being a generalist. And don't worry about the kind of projects having to match your message exactly. I've done some really interesting, crazy projects. I've actually done I used to do a lot of web content. So people who were building a website or refreshing their website. I would write for them, write the content for that. I still do that on occasion, but it's nowhere on my website. It's not something that I want to really be known for or anything like that, but it's great experience. So what I would encourage you to be thinking about is, you know, pick a message, pick some positioning, put it out there and see what happens. And in the meantime, bring in business, bring in projects, talk to lots of different people, try a couple different things, but go and put out there what you think is most comfortable for you. That's really, you can speak to comfortably. And don't worry if you get some like crazy side job that like has nothing to do with what your website says, because that happens all the time. I think any writer will tell you, yeah, this is, you know, what I focus on, how I market myself, how I present myself to the world. But yeah, I have these one-off crazy things too, or, you know, something that's, you know, I think somebody mentioned education earlier, because I think she said that it might've been Jenny saying that she's, you know, she's got this project right now that happens to be education. So maybe I'll stick that in there too. Only in put it in, into your messaging if it's a good fit, like Ed was explaining. But if it's just something that's kind of a one-off, it's a great opportunity, you're learning, go for it, but don't let it distract you from kind of taking that next step with where you think you want to be focusing your business.
That's a great point, Susan, because it's right now the very common thing that happens is, let's say I position myself for higher ed, but mm-hmm. as I'm tapping my network, which is the first step in the prospecting process here, you may get referred to someone in a different industry, let's say insurance.
Exactly. Yep.
And I say, go for it. Go for it anyway. It's because right now, guess what? You're trying to land a client, period. So for now, for you guys, yes, drive that stake in the ground. And if the referral is for someone in a different industry, go for it. And then here's the thing. What positioning yourself right now does is it gives you clarity when you communicate with prospects, number one. Number two, it makes you the obvious choice when someone is talking with you and they see that you focus on them. And number three, it gives you focus with your outbound marketing, with your prospecting. Because now you know, okay, well, out of millions and millions of prospects, this gives me kind of a narrower field, right? So I don't have to waste my time going everywhere. But if someone comes to you, if it's a good fit and they're outside of your wheelhouse, as long as it is a good fit, I'd say go for it. I ended mm-hmm. up working for a division of Kaiser Permanente one time. They contacted me. That's healthcare. You know, my focus is software. But and I told her that, and she said, Ed, you know what? It doesn't matter. I looked at your white papers, which is what I'm interested in, and I love your style. I mean, if you can do that, you can definitely do what we need. And so she was sold, you know,
mm. yep.
and it was a good fit. So went yeah. for it. Good stuff. Yeah, thank you, Susan. Great, great point. All right. Let's see. Let me go to a couple of questions that I have here in the queue. And, guys, if you have a question, it's better to type it into the submit a question for Ed instead of the chat area. The chat is really just to get feedback. We're going to talk there about, you know, wins, projects you're working on, insights, next steps, that kind of thing. Paul said, I'm in module one on positioning. I have a background in medical device repair, self-storage management, and online education, home, school, K-12. For now, I should probably advertise myself as having experience in these three areas until the market tells me where to specialize, correct? Not really, Paul, and here's why. I'm okay with having three different target markets if they feel like they could, like they complement each other in some way, like they fit together. You know, that example I gave earlier of insurance, massage therapists, and landscape companies, that they don't go together, okay? So I think you have a similar situation here. Medical device, self-storage, and online education, those are three very separate things. You're diluting your message and your efforts, like we just talked about here with Susan. So my advice is pick one. And here's the thing, and I know people hesitate. It's like, but if I pick one, then I have to say no to the others. That is a normal tendency. But I want you to remember that as long as the one you pick is a big enough market, and the way I determine that is I ask myself, if I had a slice of a slice of a slice of the market, you know, would that be enough business? In most cases, the answer is, well, not only is it enough business, but it's more than you can handle, then that's okay. So pick one based on the positioning exercise. And the positioning exercise, just to summarize, walked you through several things. Where do you have experience? And then for each item that you listed, do you have a network there, number one? Do they sell products and services that need to be explained and marketed in writing? So do they value and understand the value of content marketing? And then number three, how do you feel about the topics and the companies that you would be working with? Okay, so rate it through those three separate layers or filters, each one. Do that for medical device repair, self-storage, and online education, and then make a decision. And, you know, if you're still stuck, let me know. But I urge you to, you know, do – if you can't come up with one, narrow it down to at least two, and then let's see where you are. But that's going to be a lot more effective to start with one than it will be to, well, let me just kind of – I don't want to pick one just in case, because there's plenty of business potentially in each one of these for it to be your sole thing. All right, let's see. Nikiro said, I've set up as a lead gen copywriter because it seems like an issue B2B companies struggle with, and because it would enable me to write both copy, meaning landing pages, pre-sale, sale pages, etc., and the lead magnets, white papers, case studies, etc. I then read that you started in this niche and it didn't work out, and also on Facebook someone mentioned that you have advised against it. So now I'm worried, since I have completely branded myself as lead generation. Why is it an issue, and how can I best approach this? Okay, so let's start with that one, because I know you got another question. It's not that I advise against it necessarily. I don't say, hey, do not do this. My experience has been that most clients are not looking for someone to help them with lead generation when it comes to a writer. They instead, the biggest opportunity is going to be with content. Hey, I need this case study written, this article written, this blog, this series of blog posts, a white paper, that kind of thing, as opposed to I need someone to write our lead generating emails. That is a higher risk proposition, because you're giving someone, when a company hires that out, they're going to look for someone with a track record in most cases, because, you know, when they put that out there, they need results. They need tangible results, and that is a very measurable thing. So when you're starting out, and if you don't have that track record already, it's going to be an issue. It's going to be an objection. They're going to want to know, well, you know, have you done this before? What results have you gotten? So I don't want to discourage you. It's just going to take you longer, because you're going to need to find someone who's willing to give you a shot. And most of the time, that's going to come through a relationship. So that's where you're really going to have to tap your network. If you go after content instead — by content, I'm talking about educational content, white papers, case studies, articles, blog posts, reports, that sort of thing — those are lower risk projects, number one. And number two, there's more of them. And number three, it's the kind of thing that many companies want to outsource because they don't want to do it in-house, or they don't have the resources to do it in-house. They're more time-intensive projects, generally speaking, and they just don't have the bandwidth to get it done. So, start out with where you can get the biggest results fastest, and once you're in the door with a client, then look for opportunities to help them with some of their lead generation projects. So once you're in there, it says, hey, by the way, what are you doing to promote this white paper? What are you doing with email marketing right now? And have that conversation. It'll be easier to have that conversation at that point because you have a relationship. You now have trust with that prospect, okay? So I don't want to discourage you. This is really about what you lead with. And if you lead with that, it's going to be easier to get in the door with content. Once you're in the door, then look for opportunities with lead generation projects. That would be my advice. Okay, so Nikuru's second question is, I've been reading about productizing services, bundling my services where possible into some handy package. for instance, like a lead generation package that includes a landing page, lead magnet, blog? Do I mention it on my website, but I've not created any specific packages? What are your thoughts on this? All right, my thoughts are very clear. I would not worry about this right now. Productizing and packaging and bundling is a great idea once you've had a little bit of experience. Right now you're flying blind. You don't know what your clients and projects, or your clients and prospects rather, are going to want, how they're buying this stuff. It's better to wait until you have some clients under your belt. Once you start seeing patterns, hey, I'm noticing that I'm getting asked for a series of blog posts, but then some clients want help with their editorial calendar as well for their articles and blog posts. Then you can propose or create a package that includes several tiers of that. Hey, I got, an 8-post package. Then I got an 8-post package with an editorial calendar, and then I got that. But it also includes not just the editorial calendar, but also the project management. And you can do things like that that you know make sense based on what you're seeing. But right now, it'd be all based on theory, and it's not really going to get you ahead. The reason people are going to hire you today has nothing to do with your bundles and your packages. The reason they're going to hire you is based on how you're positioning yourself and how you're handling the conversation that you have with them, and those sorts of things that you're going to be learning here in this program. So don't worry. Don't look for something outside of this that you feel or think might give you an edge. It won't right now, but it's something that you could look at to do in the future for sure. All right, and there's another one here. Let's see. From Maryland. This is actually a win. Maryland had submitted earlier. Actually, Sirius has started this program. I realized that I was procrastinating because of fear of failure. I started to overcome that. This program is helping me make it work. That's fantastic. Great to hear that, Maryland. Good stuff. All right, and I see, Nikur, I got your question twice, so I think we're covered there. Let's do this. Let's go around the virtual room, if you will. I want to wrap this up. I want to make sure that everyone has some good action items and takeaways. So let's start in the chat box by going through let me know what your top takeaway was for today. Top takeaway for today based on our conversation. And while I'm waiting, Tin, let me make sure just a quick question. Do you recommend any service that helps you send email via your domain name email? Right now I'm sending email from my domain name email via Gmail, and it has been a hit and miss. If you remember when I sent you an email, it went to your spam folder. If you're sending email from your domain name via Gmail, that really shouldn't be a factor. I don't really know of a service. I'm sure there's something like that that will here's what you want. You can either have your email hosted through your web host or through a service like Gmail, like Google has email hosting. That's what we do here. That's what I do. I prefer and I recommend hosting it through Google, and it will use your domain. So it won't be a Gmail address. It will be, in my case, @b2blauncher.com. And it's just for the email, not for the website. Google is hosting my email accounts. And that's what I would recommend. It's a heck of a lot more reliable. And from a spam standpoint, I think it's going to help you a lot more. I'm a little confused. It sounds like you were already doing that, or maybe I'm misreading it, Tin. So let me know if that's the case. So, again, guys, top takeaways with a T in the chat box. Top takeaway from our conversation today. Susan says, I give myself a time limit on finding an individual's email, send the Hail Mary and press on. Yes, absolutely love that. I'm telling you, it's better to keep moving and keep going than it is to wear yourself ragged by trying to find every single email address. It's not going to happen. It's unrealistic. Tin, is it in the G Suite? I think so. If you type in Google email hosting, it'll come up. Let me see. Google email hosting. G Suite. I think it's what it's called, G Suite. Yep, so I think that's what you have. Jenny says, top action item, retargeting agencies, aim for those focused on a particular market. Absolutely. So quick insight for you guys, by the way, and we're, depending on where you're in the program, I talk about agencies later on, but here's the big insight with agencies. With agencies, it's not about approaching them to see if you can take over some of their overflow work. With agencies, it's about positioning yourself as someone who focuses on this market, on this target market, which is one target market that you can tell they go after. What agencies really want is not a helper when it comes to a writer. They want a writer who can hit the ground running. So if you have a certain experience, you know, in education, tech, healthcare, financial services, whatever your area of expertise might be from your career, that's what's really valuable to them. Not, hey, I can be the helper, or I can, you know, take over flow work, because that's what everybody else can do. That's what everybody else is telling them. But if you have specific domain expertise or experience, they can work with that. That's useful. Erica says, top action item, just go for the opportunities when they present themselves and don't worry if it's the exact right fit. Absolutely. Good stuff. Rochelle, start out as a generalist and keep moving. Yes, you'll course correct along the way for sure. Jason says, feeling hesitant is good. Hit send. Fantastic. I love that. We just wrapped up a case study with a previous student of this program who really hesitated for a while to hit send. Once she did, the magic happened, and that was, you know, that was her biggest takeaway from this, was that hitting send is the key. The worst that can happen is you get no response, you know. So the best thing that can happen, it's got huge upside. A lot of good things can happen. Linda says, you just gave me my big takeaway, Google email hosting. Thanks. Yeah, absolutely. So here's what I learned with email hosting. Web host companies, they do email hosting reluctantly. They hate doing it. I had no idea until last year or 2 years ago. They hate doing it. They offer it because they know they need to, but they do a horrible job of it. Their spam filtering is absolutely horrific. I was getting slammed after having my email for, you know, whatever, 15 years, 14 years with spam. And once I moved over to Google email hosting, it was like it was a dream. It's fast, reliable, it stopped all the spam, it's fantastic. And if my website were to go down, the email doesn't, because the email is being hosted by another company. Okay, so it's just another good thing. Nikuru says, big takeaway, rework my website and positioning to talk about producing the educational thought leadership content they can use for lead gen, as opposed to claiming to be a lead gen specialist. Yeah, good stuff. Corey says, stop overthinking everything and start sending warm emails. Pivot and adjust later. Good stuff. Yes, big thing. All right, and then lastly, action items, top action item. I want you to have something front and center right now that you're going to be doing next. What is your top action item over the next week or two to keep that momentum, to keep making progress, to move ahead? Type in A, capital A, in the chat box and let me know your top action item. Erica says, top action item, finish updating my website. Yes. Quick tip on the website, it will never be done. It will never be done. At some point, you got to go live and then start knocking on doors. You will iterate several times in your first year. And I've seen people wait until it was perfect, and they waited 9 months, And guess what? The next week, they refined it again. So there comes a point very early on when refining further is not going to help you. Better to go with what you've got. Give me an opportunity to give you a website review, make those suggested changes, and just go to market. Top action item for Jenny, finish my positioning statement, follow up with active prospect. Good stuff. Nikuru says, top action items, finishing positioning and adjust homepage content, dedicating specific time blocks for specific actions. Yeah, good stuff. Jason, top action items, keep playing the numbers game, 20 to 25 emails to prospects and network a week until marketing methods. Yeah, good stuff. Good stuff. Sounds like tapping your network is really going to pay off for you, Jason. So it's great that you're starting there. Linda says, top action item, now that I know of a better email host, I'll be sending my first warm email, which is already written, just have had trouble sending it. Good stuff. Send, hit send. That's the key. All right. Anybody else? Top action item for the next week or two. Important to keep that momentum. All right. Guys, you're doing fantastic. And I hope just hearing the questions from others has given you a little bit of clarity, too, on where you might need to make some changes or progress. But, look, the name of the game is getting little wins that boost your confidence, that help you get the momentum you need to keep going. This is all about stair-stepping your way to success, about trading up. Your first few clients are not going to be impressive. It does happen. I have had several people, quite a few actually, who have done just that. Their first client is actually fairly impressive. But that's not the norm. Don't go or don't think that your first few clients are going to be that. They're not going to be IBM. They're not going to be Dow Chemical. They're not going to be Kaiser Permanente, okay? Your first few clients are going to be stepping stones, okay? They're going to give you the foundation to keep trading up and keep going, and that's how it gets done. You just do it one step at a time. The most important thing is to keep moving. Every Monday morning, I strongly recommend that you have at least three things written down that you're going to do this week to help keep things moving forward in your business, okay, in your launch. So, and then just look at them every day and make sure that, okay, what can I do today to advance one of these three? What can I do today? At the end of the week, you know, hopefully you'll have just, you know, one left and can wrap that up. But keep that front and center, because I find that most of us have good intentions, but unless we're continually looking at our top action items, it's just not going to get done. So, guys, with that, we'll go ahead and wrap up for today. Let's continue the conversation in the Facebook forum. You guys have a great rest of the day, fantastic weekend. We'll talk again real soon. Take care.